Coming up, talking NBA schedule release, some of my favorite games, things I'm watching for, stuff I'm excited about. And then I bring on Danny Heifetz talking about NFL and fantasy football. That's all coming up right now. The NBA schedule is out. Here's what I'm most looking forward to, starting with the rematch I most want to watch. Nuggets, Thunder, this new look Nuggets team after getting rid of Michael Porter Jr. You got Cam Johnson, Bruce Brown, Jonas Valanciunas, Daron Holmes is back. When do they face the Thunder? February 1st. So we got to wait a while for it until February 1st. But this does mean we get four Nuggets Thunder games in the last 3 months of the season. February 1st, Nuggets host the Thunder, then at OKC on February 27th, at OKC on March 9th, and then at Denver on April 10th. So those could be big games for the standings, and at least it's going to be some playoff previews down the stretch. I just can't wait to see how this Denver team looks reloaded against OKC. And OKC, like, they didn't make any major changes besides paying anybody, but did their young guys get better in the same way that we think on paper Denver's roster got better with their external addition? So that's the game I'm most looking forward to from the season, aside from what we already learned with Christmas opening night and games like that. But I think it's also worth noting that that February 1st game between the Nuggets and the Thunder, that's part of a launch night for NBC with Sunday night basketball, because we also get the Lakers and Knicks on that same night, which is going to be an awesome game. LeBron at MSG, assuming there's like no trade demands by that point, but Lakers at Knicks, and then you also get Nuggets Thunder. I think that's going to be awesome. And that's one of the key things with the schedule release that we've learned a lot about, is we're getting something like NBC's Sunday Night Basketball. Prime Video with Amazon is going to have their select Saturdays. So on Saturday afternoons, the NBA is having, I believe, more afternoon games than ever before, which means more primetime starts overseas. So they clearly are organizing this to have like an international flavor. On March 28th, we get Wemby versus Giannis. On April 4th, we get Wemby versus Jokic. And those are like early afternoon games on the East Coast, primetime games in Europe. So I think for the NBA, like, I feel like as I look at the schedule, there's a lot of events. Obviously, it's a lot of games. It's 82 games. That is unchanged. We still get the NBA Cup. We still get the play-in tournament. It's a lot of games. But I feel like they've kind of made events around it. And that's what feels different with the schedule this year that has me really excited. And I think for fans, especially for casual fans, like, if you're watching this video, I don't think you're going to have any issues ever finding a game to watch. But for casual fans, it seems like the NBA's creating some stuff to make it easier to find games, because they're having this new feature that's going to direct fans to live NBA games using different like social media and digital platforms. So I think like on League Pass or NBA.com or like different apps, different partners, from what I understand, is the NBA is going to try to provide a simple path for fans to just find live games. So maybe you'll be able to click and it'll take you to a certain app to watch a game live or something along those lines. But with games, with these new networks, it's going to be harder for maybe a casual fan to find games, or maybe it's easier with all these different paths. But it seems like generally this is the way it's going to be with games. On Mondays, they're going to be on Peacock. On Tuesday, on NBC. On Wednesday, they'll be on ESPN. On Thursday, on Prime Video. On Friday, on Prime Video and ESPN. On Saturday, on Prime Video in the afternoon, and then ABC at night. And then on Sunday, we'll have ABC games in the afternoon and then NBC games at night. So I think with this app, or, you know, whatever way they're trying to work it out on digital, they said they'll announce that later in the season with the specifics of how it's going to work. Should be easier for casual fans, not harder, I hope. But either way, like, I'm very excited to see these games on NBC and Amazon, because I really love the people that they've hired for those gigs. I think it's going to be great. Other games that I'm looking forward to, I want to go to the end of the season. Final day of the regular season in the Western Conference. We know the West is going to be a gauntlet. We get the Warriors against the Clippers. We get the Nuggets against the Spurs. We get the Grizzlies against the Rockets. Like, those three games are, at least on paper, you know, right now in the middle of August, by far the best games of the day. So final day of the regular season, I think those are the matchups, even more so than like putting aside lottery stuff. there's not a lot of games that, like, I think are between two serious lottery teams unless there's injuries that happen, but those are the playoff implication games in all likelihood. And then in the East, we have the Bucks and the Sixers. Hopefully Joel Embiid and the Sixers make it to the finish line, and hopefully that game has a lot of big implications. On March 3rd, this is one of my favorite days that I saw of the whole schedule. We get some rookie games. Start of March Madness on the college basketball side, but in the NBA, we get Cooper Flagg and the Mavs against Con Knipple and the Hornets. And then with the same night, we have Dylan Harper and the Spurs against Vijay Edgecombe and the Sixers. So we see the top four picks all face off against each other on the same night. I think that's going to be really cool. And in terms of rookie games, one of the guys that I was most intrigued to see in the Vegas Summer League was Yang Hansen. And so I'm curious to see him in the regular season. And I particularly want to see what it looks like for Portland with the fact they have Yang. They drafted Donovan Klingon last year. They still have Robert Williams III, Time Lord, on the roster. So what does this Blazers team look like with all these bigs? Well, on opening night for the Blazers, they're facing the Timberwolves. No better team for them to go against with Rudy Gobert and Julius Randle and Naz Reid and all the bigs on Minnesota. So I'm really excited to see Yang go against this Minnesota team, like the toughest possible test for them on opening night as really young guys. But ultimately, I just can't wait to see the way this young Blazers team plays. To me, I think it's one of the stories of the season. They had one of the best defenses in basketball in the second half of the year. How does this team make strides moving forward? Does Scoot Henderson take a leap? Shaedon Sharpe, all these young guys. Does Denny Avdia carry over what he did in the second half of last year? Portland is going to be one of the teams that I'm watching very, very closely this season. The returns, we know KD opening night, Houston against Oklahoma City. Going to watch him raise the banner. He's already talking trash about that, as I talked about with slightly biased on my podcast earlier in the week. But the Miles Turner going back to Indiana, that one I'm really looking forward to on November 3rd as well. I think that's going to be a really fun game after he surprised everybody and left the Milwaukee Bucks. That's going to be a fun one. It's not a return as much as, like, hopefully a renewal of the rivalry. Trae Young and the Hawks going to Madison Square Garden on January 2nd against the Knicks. That's going to be a fun one. I hope I get to attend that game. That'd be a really, really fun game to do. Maybe I'll do New Year's Eve in New York. I've never done that. It's probably too crazy. I don't know. But maybe I'll do New Year's Eve in New York and stay through for that January 2nd game, because that would be really a fun one to go to. Rivalries. I hope to God. We already know Chet Holmgren, OKC, they're playing on December 25th against Victor Wembanyama and the Spurs. We already know that. So clearly the NBA is making an investment in, obviously, Wemby, but also in this rivalry between Chet and Wemby. And also just in the terms of what the Spurs could be against OKC as a nemesis against the defending champions. But they're also playing a home and home. That's what this is. December 23rd, we're going to have OKC at San Antonio. And then on the 25th, it's San Antonio at OKC. So they play two games in 3 days. That's going to be fun. And then they play again on the 13th of January and of the 4th of February as well. That's my dad's birthday. I think four games over the course of 3 months, that'll be fun, but especially that two games and three nights thing. And speaking about two games and three nights, this season, the NBA is always trying to cut down on back-to-backs. They announced there's only going to be 14.4 back-to-backs on average per team compared to 14.9 last season. And they took extra precautions to make sure they're not playing back-to-backs leading into national TV games and whatnot. And they did say that no team has over 16 back-to-backs this season, which is consistent with last season. So hopefully that's a good thing. Overall, I'm really, really excited about the schedule. There's a lot of, like, fun quirks this year with the new league partners. It just feels like it's events, Sunday night basketball. Like, that just has a good ring to it. Like, knowing on Saturday afternoons in the second half of the year, you're going to be able to put on Prime and watch a game at 2 p.m. or 3 p.m. on a Saturday. I just think there's, like, a lot of good games like that where I think most years of the schedule, personally, I'm like, oh, yeah, cool, right, yeah, cool. But this year it just feels a little different. Maybe it's just because of the new league partners, and I'm just excited about seeing NBC and Peacock and Amazon Prime and all that. But I don't know. I feel like there's this other thing that they announced too, where it's like coast-to-coast Tuesdays on NBC with Peacock, and it's like they're having two games every Tuesday, all season long. Like, they have like an 11 p.m. Eastern start time game the first week of the season. I know that annoyed a lot of people, but I don't know. People also stay up late on the West Coast. Not every game needs to be at an accessible time. I just think having games on at different types of times, because it's also a morning game overseas too. Wake up early in the morning, you can watch that. So I don't know. There's just all these little things that the NBA has this year that, I don't know, I'm really excited about it. And I think this is going to be an awesome season, especially the Western Conference is just going to be, oh my God, like these games are going to be all intense. It's going to feel like every game has intense implications out West. In the East, I think there's a reason why Christmas and opening week and opening night aren't being represented too much by the Eastern Conference, but who knows? We'll see. Maybe we'll be absolutely surprised. Maybe, you know, Celtics Magic on final day of the regular season will have implications if Tatum returns or Jaylen Brown has a first team All-NBA season. Who knows? There's so much that we can't predict, but ultimately I'm fired up for the season. Let me know in the comments what you guys are most excited about this season, the one game or the series of games, whatever it is. Let me know in the comments as well, whether you're watching or listening on Spotify or YouTube. All right, we'll be back next week with more NBA. For now, let's bring on Danny Heifetz to talk a little bit of NFL. All right, let's talk some NFL with the Ringers. Danny Heifetz. Danny, how you doing, man?
I am good, man. It is an absolute pleasure to be here. Look at you. Look at your beard. Look at your glasses. You look so distinguished. Unbelievable.
You look great, Danny. You're doing great. You're hosting a massive fantasy football show with Craig. And Danny, you guys are crushing it, man. Seriously, it's been cool to see your show rise. And this is the time of year where everybody has questions about fantasy football. And last week I had Nate Tyson from Yahoo Sports because I'm trying to get back in the NFL, right? I'm trying to get back into it this year after some years away, Danny. So I wanted to bring you on to talk a little bit of NFL, talk a little bit about fantasy. So let's get back in the huddle here. And I want to start off with a fantasy quarterback question here, because I listened on your show. You guys talked about the desire and the need to have running quarterbacks, Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, Jalen Hurts, Daniels, like these quarterbacks that rack up rushing yards. And of course, they're picking up passing touchdowns, passing yards as well. What I'm wondering is, if I'm missing out on those four guys, if I'm drafting wide receivers, if I'm drafting running backs early in my draft, who's the top fantasy sleeper quarterback I should be going for in the later rounds of drafts right now, Danny?
I think that's the right question, because just to be really clear about this, the rules of fantasy football are really stupid. It's stupid. It was designed like 50 years ago. We haven't changed it. And so a rushing yard is worth like three times more than a passing yard, which is kind of stupid if you think about it. And yet that's how it is. So that's why the top four guys are Jalen Hurts and Josh Allen and Jaden Daniels and Lamar Jackson, because they run a lot and we know who's going to run. So to your point, if you don't get those guys, there's like this next tier of guys that can run that I think either could get double-digit rushing touchdowns or like 1,000 yards rushing, and you wouldn't be shocked. So it's like Kyler Murray, who's ran for 14 in the past and says he's like the most healthy he's been since he tore his ACL a couple years ago. You got Bo Nix, who is frankly a pretty talented runner and had 29 passing touchdowns for Denver last year. But I mean, Sean Payton has a lot of design runs for him. And Justin Fields, who quietly had the second most rushing yards in the history of the NFL as a quarterback a few years ago. So that's like the next tier. And then after that, it's your Drake May of your pox on our earth, New England Patriots. So I think Drake May is like right there. And even J.J. McCarthy is a dumpster dive quarterback. You can kind of get J.J. McCarthy for free, basically. So those are the people who can kind of run. And I'm a big believer that if you don't get those top four guys, though, just wait. Like, there's no point. Like, Baker Mayfield's a really fun player, but he's going, you know, I don't know where your colleagues at Yahoo have him ranked, maybe 70th or 80th overall. So maybe your 6th, 7th, 8th pick. And I'm like, but if Dak Prescott or, you know, Jordan Love is going 50 spots later, I think you're right, Kale. So you like, just wait. Just either be one of the first people to get a quarterback or just be one of the last, but there's no reason to be in the middle.
Yeah, I think typically it seems like the strategy for QBs is very similar to the last time I was really thinking about fantasy drafts and whatnot. I rejoined my friends league this year, so I'm thinking about my strategy. I don't know my pick yet. or anything like that. It's a keeper league. So I'm taking
how on long was your layoff from football, for fantasy football and real football? When did you stop paying attention to both?
So the last year I watched very, very closely was the 1920 season. So Tom Brady's final year.
You mean 2020 season?
Yeah, the 2020 season.
Oh, the 1920. I was
I'm I'm thinking in NBA terms. 2019 season. So Tom Brady's final year was my final year really watching closely.
You did the smart thing. Tom Brady took time away from New England, and you're like, I'm going to bail on this too. And then now Drake May's there, and you kind of let everyone else deal with the emotional baggage of the in-between, and now you're back in. That's a smart way to be a fan.
I mean, sure, that's one way to look at it. Part of it is like watching games every Sunday, it was something I used to do with my dad. So it's like, you know, Tom Brady leaves, my dad passes away the same year. So I'm not watching games every Sunday anymore.
Yeah.
During the pandemic in 2020 as well. So like then I moved back to LA. Part of the reason I think my NFL fandom declined wasn't just being hired to cover the NBA at the Ringer back in 2016. It was in part because I moved to LA in 2018. And I wasn't watching games every Sunday. So that's really the big reason. Place.
So I have good news for you. One silver lining to all that is you have not missed very much.
Really?
From Why is that? In the last five years, New England.
It's been horrible.
I think you missed like 16 wins in 5 years. So you're doing fine.
Wins a year.
Literally the best 5-year window in your lifetime to not do it. So good timing.
I know. I had really great timing, of course, and it's a good time to start to get back into it. I'm living on the East Coast again. Now I can watch games with my friends and all that. And so it's a good time to get back into the NFL. But it feels like from a strategy standpoint with fantasy, not a lot has changed there, right? But what has changed is, like you mentioned, Fields. He goes from the Bears to the Steelers. And I do know, like during that 21 season, he was one of the top draft picks, very hyped up. Things did not go well for him in Chicago. What reason is there for me to feel like Justin Fields could be a real good life quarterback and B, a good fantasy quarterback? Are both going to happen, Danny, here? Or is it just going to be he's going to be putting up fantasy numbers, even though he might actually suck in real life?
Both. So the argument for the in real life argument for Fields is basically, I think, the idea that I think everyone, and we talk about this all the time. We used to talk about this when you were at the Ringer about just the overconfidence in player development, draft picks, and the idea that when a player is drafted, it's like it's draft and develop. And so if you just look wider around the NFL, just pick one team, pick the Carolina Panthers. They let Sam Darnold go, and then Sam Darnold goes to Minnesota and wins 14 games. They literally dump Baker Mayfield as a salary dump, and then Baker Mayfield goes and has the second most yards and second most touchdowns last year. They bench Bryce Young on their own team last year, and then Andy Dalton gets in a car accident, hurts his thumb. Bryce Young comes back and outplays CJ Stroud the rest of the year. Like, no one knows how these quarterbacks are going to perform. Like, it's like stocks. It goes up, it down. It's like McConaughey. It's a Wazzy. It's a Woozy. Like, no one knows. Geno Smith sits on the bench for 8 years and then is like a good quarterback. So we have just seen around the league so much. It is so clear that no one understands this position generally. Now, maybe you're listening and you're like, well, Justin Fields isn't Darnold. Like, if you don't believe any of that's true, that's fine. You don't necessarily have to believe that Justin Fields will have a career resurgence. The reason that Aaron Glenn, the new head coach of the Jets, signed Justin Fields in particular is when they were in the same division for a long time. Aaron Glenn is defensive coordinator of the Lions, Justin Fields as quarterback for the Bears. Just every time Fields had any success against Detroit, it was because, you know, you call the right plays as a defensive coordinator, you cover the guys, and then Justin Fields escapes the pocket, picks up a first down anyway. And I call them BOGO quarterbacks. You buy one play, you get one free, because that you get it with the legs. That's what Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, Mahomes, even with the scrambling, is so hard to stop. Calling the right play doesn't necessarily matter. So Justin Fields has such a green light to run, and I think in the past, teams really tried to drill into Justin Fields' head, you got to play from the pocket, you got to play from the pocket. And like, yeah, you do. But also, Justin Fields' superpower is that he's built like a linebacker, but taller, and he can run a 4-4. And I think that Aaron Glenn is encouraging him to run. So when the first drive this year for the preseason, Justin Fields just scrambled. Again, everyone's covered. Justin Fields just breaks the pocket, breaks contain, runs into the end zone for touchdown. Aaron Glenn is just beaming ear to ear. And so I think Justin Fields just has this crazy green light to run this year. And the Jets have a really good offensive line, actually. It's probably the strength of their offense. So that is the argument. Now, he might still suck, but you don't have to watch the game. Just let it deal 21 points and the Jets lose by 20.
I mean, look, I like to avoid Patriots. I've always been like that when it comes to fantasy football. Unless it was Gronk, I like to avoid Patriots because I don't want to be rooting for a certain player to score. That's just always been my mindset when it comes to drafting fantasy players on my own favorite team. So I'm probably going to lean towards Fields in that scenario if I end up going a sleeper route. Well, you mentioned the running aspect and how we don't know the development of quarterbacks and all that over the course of time. Now, I know Lamar Jackson wins MVP in his second season, but he's also a guy, when he entered the NFL, there was questions about his accuracy. And even during early in his career, there was questions about his accuracy. Over the course of time, I feel like over these last 4 or 5 years, last year, 41 touchdowns, only 4 interceptions for Lamar Jackson. Is that an outlier year for him with what he did with his accuracy? Or has he indeed improved his passing accuracy over this course of time? Because with Lamar, Danny, he still hasn't come through in the postseason. So I'm just wondering, how am I supposed to feel about Lamar Jackson, the quarterback, even putting aside fantasy here with how he's changed?
I mean, I have no qualms about Lamar Jackson whatsoever. He's gotten so much better. I mean, I think both things are true. You're like, is he gonna have 10 times more touchdowns than interceptions again? Probably not. That's a pretty incredible thing. But overall, it's an outlier in the sense that statistically, it's just weird to have, for the Baltimore Ravens with Derrick Henry, to have two, basically twice as many passing touchdowns as rushing touchdowns. But it's not an outlier at all. It's because this is the best thunder lightning combo in the history of the NFL. It's literally Lamar Jackson sticking the ball in Derrick Henry's gut and reading the defense. Like, football defenses weren't designed to stop that. It's like, what are you going to do? You're going to put the ball in Derrick Henry's gut with, again, the Ravens led the league in yards before contact per attempt. So Derrick Henry's getting all, like, I mean, he's Derrick Henry. And then the flip side is, you want to send bodies to stop Derrick Henry. It's now Lamar Jackson scrambling with the ball. So I think Lamar's unbelievable. I mean, in terms of why they can't get it done or whatever, why couldn't Jason Tatum get it done? Well, he couldn't, and then he did. You know what I mean? It's just like, he's a talented player. Like, stuff happens. And so, you know, the bounce of the ball here, I could go through every single Ravens season the last 6 seasons, but the basic arc of Lamar's career is he was really talented, but he couldn't really handle the blitz. Then he got hurt. He hurt his knee. There was contract stuff. The defense is flawed. The last 2 seasons, the Ravens have been like as unbelievable a team as there's been in the NFL. They're probably one of the best teams in the history of the league to not win a Super Bowl. And it's tough. I mean, he puts the ball on Mark Andrews' numbers last year for a 2-point conversion. They should have gone to overtime in that division round versus the Bills. The year before that, they're in the AFC Championship game. I was there. It's like the Ravens have 2 turnovers in the end zone. Zay Flowers is reaching for the end zone, and he gets karate chopped at the half-yard line. And the fumbles and dumb rule, it's like the ball goes out, touchback. The margins in the NFL are so thin, but it's like the NBA. It's like what if Kevin Durant's toe was like a quarter of an inch shorter and he makes that 3 in the Nets Bucks series a few years ago, and then the Nets beat the Bucks in the second round of the playoffs, and we're like, wow, Giannis wouldn't go one-on-one with James Harden in the post? It's like, why can't Giannis get it done? It's like the march, but guess what, they went ahead and they won. So I don't know, I think Lamar, Giannis is actually to me the right comp, where it's the margins are so thin. But overall, he's like unlike anything I've ever seen. I think he's an unbelievable player. And I do think the Ravens, I they're personally my pick to win the AFC this year.
One of my, I think, best NFL takes was Lamar Jackson will be the best quarterback in this year's draft class.
You were right.
Some might argue otherwise. Josh Allen.
Let me tell you something. No one knows quarterbacks. The Ravens took Hayden Hurst, a 25-year-old tight end, in that draft before they took Lamar Jackson. So no one knew that Lamar Jackson would be Lamar Jackson. The Ravens took a tight end before they took Lamar. Like, the whole, you know, no one knows.
That's crazy. Well, some people would argue Josh Allen is the best quarterback from that class.
It's one strong argument to make. Sure. Yeah, they're great. Yeah, Josh is great. I got nothing bad. You NBA nerds are always like, the league's in good hands. The NFL is in great hands. Like, the quarterback in the NFL is unbelievable right now. It's like a truly special, special time.
Yeah, I mean, I think there was a little bit of a dip when, you know, Manning retired and Tom Brady was still hanging on, but there was a dip in quarterback play. But right now, it seems to be in a very great spot. Is there a team this year, Danny, that would surprise me, like or surprise everybody even this year? Like, who do you think is kind of a sleeper team this year in the NFL?
So I guess it depends on definition of surprise and kind of how plugged in you are. I think it depends, because it's like, I mean, the Patriots are probably the favorite to go from like the last place division team to like, you know, maybe making the playoffs. But also, they're kind of a popular pick. You know, Mike Vrabel, Drake May, it's not groundbreaking. The 49ers are a very popular team, where it's like they have the easiest schedule in the NFL, and they lost Deebo Samuel. Brandon Ayuk is probably not going to play for a couple months into the season. So they're a team that are widely expected to make the playoffs after a disastrous season. But I don't think those are really surprising. If I was going to say a surprising team, I kind of think the Arizona Cardinals are a team that basically no one ever thinks about ever, Kyler Murray's probably the most talented player in the NFL that no one ever thinks about. But I think the Cardinals could actually win the NFC West because basically, I mean, the Rams were really good last year, but Matthew Stafford's out here getting epidurals in his back. I love the idea of a Rams if they're healthy, but if Stafford's hurt and Jimmy Garoppolo is playing, like, to me, all bets are off. Like, Devontae Adams went way out of his way to not play with Jimmy Garoppolo when they were at the Raiders. So, I mean, Jimmy Garoppolo and Devontae, I don't think it's going to work. So if you're Arizona, they have Drew Petzing's their offensive coordinator, does really modern stuff. I think Kyler's back to full health after his ACL, which is an underrated thing of how long that takes to recover. And the defense is really modern. Jonathan Gannon, who's the head coach there, came from the Philadelphia Eagles. They added Josh Sweat from the Eagles in free agency. Like, they added Will Johnson from Michigan, who is like this very, very, very highly rated cornerback there. And I think they're a team that they're doing a lot of funky cutting edge stuff on offense that's very boring. Marvin Harrison Jr. had a bad rookie year, but there to me, they check every box schematically, health wise, the trenches, like improvements in all the right areas that I'm like, and also just the schedule. I mean, they start like Saints, Panthers. I mean, I think Arizona could be like the weird 6-1 team to start the year.
What does Kyler Murray need to do for the Cardinals to take that leap this season?
It's a great question. Sorry, I'm dying. It's, I feel like I'm in the Arizona heat right now, just dying of thirst. I think that the thing I always wonder about Kyler Murray is like the
you have a salty teams. Lunch or something like that.
No, I don't know. I'm just like choking on my own words. Like, you're picking the Cardinals? No, I always thought about Kyler Murray kind of like Ben Simmons, which I don't. It's super unfair to Kyler Murray. But I think that there are similar questions about them. Just not that
does he
I
have know a ben jumper? Simmons, does he shoot with the wrong? What is the Ben Simmons shoot with the wrong hand with Kyler Murray? What is the equivalent?
Play the wrong sport. He should have played baseball. No, I think that
that's a good possibility.
Being the number one pick in for a quarterback for the NFL instead of going to play for like Wisconsin Whitewater single A baseball for the A's was probably the right call. Just my guess.
That's true.
No, but I think with Kyler, there was just questions about, like, I mean, leadership and something that never happens, which was a couple of years ago, the starting left tackle for the team was like, yeah, Kyler needs to work on his leadership, which you don't hear that about from
he says
players
that with a microphone in his face.
Yeah, on the record, about your current quarterback. I mean, outside of either Carson Wentz or retired, like, no one says that about their current quarterback. It's not said, never mind a guy in his prime. So, I just think that was the thing, but I think that he's learned. I do kind of think Kyler's matured. And also just Kyler has the thing with shorter quarterbacks. And this isn't like a dig at all the short kings listening, but it's just a reality of modern offense that if it's not that you can't be a quarterback under 6 feet, 6 feet one, it's more that if you are, like, what is your superpower to do it? So Kyler has what young Russell Wilson had, which people kind of forget how good young Russell Wilson was, where the scrambling, which my co-host at the Ringer Fantasy Football Show, Danny Kelly, describes as like a toddler running around who stole your phone. Kyler is just uncatchable. And so this is what Drew Brees was really good at, is perfecting footwork to see between your linemen if you can't necessarily see over them. And so what happens with shorter quarterbacks, and Nate Tice, your colleague at Yahoo, talks about this all the time, is it can mess with the timing of the offense. And so I think if Kyler can play in a better timing of the offense with Marvin Harrison Jr., I do think that was some of the struggles overall. But Trey McBride, the tight end, is so good. I do think the offensive, Paris Johnson Jr., the left tackle, I think could actually quietly become like one of the better tackles in the entire NFL period. There's so much talent in this offense that I really think that Kyler regaining the athleticism post ACL, I think people really underrate how much it takes a couple years after the injury to get back to yourself. Because Kyler is a crazy athlete. Again, it's almost under discussed that he literally was a top 10 pick in the MLB draft. Like, he's crazy, crazy, crazy athletic. He made some insane plays in while you were out not watching football. And so I think the combination of his athleticism dwindling, just Arizona just being kind of like one of the lesser fan base, not no offense to Cardinals fans, but like they're not necessarily the Dallas Cowboys. I think they don't always get the spotlight, but the Cardinals, to me, I would not be shocked at all. If Kyler just looked better in this offense.
All these second generation players make me feel so old in the NBA and the NFL. It's so crazy.
Don't even get me started. It's actually, I feel really, really like Asante Samuel Jr.'s rookie contract is almost up.
My God.
You know what I mean? Like that. I don't like that.
Yeah. It's crazy, man. I don't want to be reminded of Asante Samuel. I don't.
Yeah.
And you know why, Danny. You know
I do.
I don't want to. Goddamn right. Great player. Had the worst moment. Don't want to be reminded of it. You do like to be reminded of it, but let's move on. Which rookie wide receiver is going to have the highest impact this year?
This is really boring, but I think it will be one of the first five guys drafted. I feel really strongly about that. So you can go in order. I mean, my pick would actually, it's a little cheating to say Tetsuo Roer McMillan, who's the number 8 overall pick. He went to the Carolina Panthers, who, again, your colleague Nate Tice describes as a big player who plays big. It's Carolina's answer to Mike Evans, like, because the Carolina coach, Dave Canales, came from Tampa Bay, and they have Mike Evans there, and Mike Evans is a freak. And I think, like, they call him T-Mac, and he's a freak too. And so it's easy to say the giant 6'4" guy who played volleyball on High Points catches, but also has the skill set to go underneath. And I think he'll change the Carolina offense. But it's kind of cheating to just take the guy who's taken by a lot. I will go with Matthew Golden for Green Bay, who I think is both for real life and fantasy really underrated. And I think he checks the boxes of someone who fell through the cracks for a variety of reasons. And Matthew Golden basically had bad underlying statistics for the nerds who try to translate and project numbers for fantasy. And I also just think Matthew Golden falls through for people who are like, well, he won't have a big impact because Green Bay rotates the receivers. But I love Matthew Golden. There's an amazing video that just came out. If you go to Adam Schefter's Instagram about him buying his grandmother a house, which I always am a sucker for, but love that. But Matthew Golden was this track athlete, like, he's a 4.3 speed. Most guys who are crazy fast in the NFL suck, like, at real football. You know what I mean? It's like they're crazy athletic, they're crazy fast, but they don't really have, like, the football skills. Matthew Golden has football skills. Matthew Golden, he has probably top-tier hands in the entire class at just catching the football. He plays larger than he is. And also, he has tempo. I think a lot of guys with speed don't know how to shift up the speed, how to use. Like, you can't just go 0 to 60 all the time. Like, Matthew Golden knows how to throttle up, throttle down. Like, get guys off their positioning. Like, play receiver, sit in zones, and he just has feel. And frankly, a lot of guys with 4.3 speed don't have feel. They just know how to run really fast. And so I really like Matthew Golden. And then you look, Jaden Reed, who's the other receiver there, has a sprained foot. Christian Watson's coming off a bad knee injury. I don't even know if Christian Watson's going to play this season. So I just think Matthew Golden's going to be doing another thing that happened while you were out not watching football was Mike McDaniel in Miami started doing these crazy motions, which I don't know how it took so long to do this, but he stole an idea from Canadian football where you put Tyreek Hill in motion and he just runs full speed. So when the ball is snapped, the fastest player in the NFL is at full speed while you're standing straight. And you're kind of like, how did people not think of that? I think Matt LaFleur in Green Bay is going to take that idea, and you're going to have Matthew Golden doing this Tyreek Hill impersonation of, here's a guy who runs a 4.3 track sprinter who's going, but with feel, is going to be at full speed, like, all the time. Two receiver sets all the time, and they're just going to build all this stuff off of it. And I think it's really cool to watch.
One of the reasons why I wanted to ask about wide receiver is because in my draft this year, depending on where I pick, of course, I'm thinking about taking one of the best tight ends early, one of the best quarterbacks early, having security there, winning that position basically every week. That requires you, though, to really either go 0 running back and or hit on some of these mid-round, later-round wide receivers. I feel like there's an element of risk in that compared to going, quarterback by committee, rotating your quarterback every week. Do you think I'm on the right track there, Danny, with that thinking? Like, are there a number of rookie wide receivers this year, or first or second year guys at the position this year? Or is it just banking on, like, a Golden, and then other than that, I might be screwed?
No, I think overall you're right. I will start. How about I start you with a very obvious proven thing, and then I'll throw some crazy ideas past you and I'll see what sticks. How about that?
Okay.
I'll start with, to your point, overall you're right, where if you're in a league with your friends, if you're paying attention to fantasy football, the easiest way, I would say the quote unquote easiest way to win, is getting the advantage of quarterback, getting it, Jalen Hurts, Jaden Daniels, Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen, where you're going to win that position every week, and then getting a Trey McBride, a Brock Bowers, or a George Kittle, who are just going to be so much better than the other tight ends. And it's kind of locking in the predictableness of those positions, and then basically saying getting either one great running back, which it doesn't have to be a top 3 guy, even a top 10 guy, to kind of anchor that spot, and then hammering wide receiver, and then basically banking, I am going to just know more about the NFL than the other people in my league, and I'm going to figure out that number 2 running back spot. Because you have people like me who are going to tell you, hey, like, this is a little weird, but, Javonte Williams is going to start for the Cowboys this year, and that isn't, like, sexy. But the Cowboys might be the top 5 offense in the NFL, and Javonte Williams will probably eke out a very ugly 1,000 yards and 8 touchdowns or something, and it'll work as your number 2 spot. So I do think that that is overall the right thing. Either 0 running backs and just taking 2 of the top 12 receivers this year, which they're crazy depth. The top 14 receivers this year are, like, unbelievable. And so if you want to start out receiver, quarterback, tight end, like, that's fine. If you want to get receiver running back in the first two rounds and go quarterback tight end or get Chase Brown in the third, whatever, that's fine. But overall, I think it is the right move if you want to lock in an elite tight end or an elite quarterback, or wait on quarterback and just get a bunch of, you know, whatever you want to do. And then later, just hammering receiver and running back. I think that is the right move as time goes on. Yeah, because there are a bunch of rookie receivers like that.
Is zero running back still a very prominent strategy in fantasy these days?
Yeah, it depends. So last year, everyone who did that just got washed out to sea because it was the healthiest season I can ever remember in my life for running back. 16 of the top 20 really? Running backs basically didn't miss time. But also, I think there could be an overcorrection on that sometimes. So it depends. We joke on our show, and we're going to do an episode in the next week or so called The All Boring Team, which is half of a joke and half not, where our theory, again, that's kind of a bit, but I actually think we're right, is you can't get a discount on cool players. Like, cool players in their prime will never be discounted. So you either need cool, but it's a joke, but it's not. And so you either cool players who are old, like Derrick Henry, or Mike Evans, or Tyreek Hill, where people are afraid that they're going to fall off a cliff, or you need uncool players. And so the idea being there's actually a tremendous amount of value in either young, basically the three buckets of value are rookies who haven't done it yet, and people just psychologically need to see and done it. So a Matthew Golden Green Bay, no one knows who that is. McMillan for the Panthers, who's like, people are like, oh, I'm going to use the 54th pick on him. I don't want it. He's going to be worth it. And then, you know, Emeka Buka for the Buccaneers, who's the rookie at Ohio State, who I want to talk about you. He's like the ultimate character guy. Sam Presti for the Thunder would draft Emeka Buka. And I'm like, he's going to be good. He's going to market correct Chris Godwin, but people haven't seen it yet. They don't want to take him. But the flip side is older guys. Like, you could build a whole team out of old guys. Like, Derrick Henry, it's perfect. Derrick Henry had 2,000 yards from scrimmage last year. Derrick Henry is the second best year of his entire career. And he's like going to go like 10th or 12th. It's like, that's kind of amazing if you think about the fact you can walk out of your draft with Derrick Henry and AJ Brown as your first two picks. That's totally feasible, which is crazy to think about. So basically, older players, younger players, and boring players are the three buckets where you can pretty reliably succeed. I don't know if that actually answers your question, but the point being, within that, if you can grab an elite quarterback and elite tight end, within that, you're like, oh, I walked away with Derrick Henry. I walked away with these guys. Look at all these rookie receivers who are going to pop. Look at James Conner on the Cardinals, who no one ever cares about, but he's going to probably end up a top 12 running back again, even though you're going to take him 20th among running backs. So that is basically my philosophy, but I could get more specific if you want. I don't know if that helps.
I mean, I think for me, like, I've always, you know, I've had my success. I've won my championships playing fantasy, but I've also had my busts. I've had my Killian Hayes moments playing fantasy football too, most notably drafting Trent Richardson in the first round when he was a rookie years ago. I was one of those dumbasses taking him in the first round when he was in the Colts.
You know what? Everyone's had something like that. Everybody, and then after that, there was Clyde Edwards-Helaire. A lot has happened, man. A lot's been going on. It always makes me feel better that, like, when I get upset, I'm like, oh, yeah, John Elway took Jerry Jeudy over Justin Jefferson. I'm like, that's kind of
stupid. I know. That's John Elway.
You think he does something. I'm like, yeah.
And everybody makes those mistakes, right? So this year, I think one of the rookie running backs is my guy, Travion Henderson, with the New England Patriots, who had a great first preseason game, showed off all the goods right away, the power, the speed, the elusiveness, everything. He looked excellent. He's probably going to be like a fifth or a sixth-ish round pick in most leagues. I'm sure in my league full of Patriots fans will probably be even higher than that. Like, he's the sexy player you're talking about, like the allure of a young up-and-coming player. Those players are sexy, but they're a bit more risky because there's no guarantee of sustainable success for a rookie running back, right?
No. Well, man, I coming into training camp, I was like, you know, Ramondre Stevens going to have a way bigger role in this team than people think. Like, Ramondre, you know, he's only 27. Yeah, I'm like, you know, rookies don't always play for New England. Like, you know, I Travion Henderson has all the skills to be one of the rookies who plays, but people got to calm down. Ramondre's still there. Then I saw training camp and I talked to people there and then I saw him play and I'm like, you know, So on our show, the Ringer Fantasy Football Show, every year before the season, we do something called the Take Purge, which is a bit we do where we get out all the, you start prepping for the season, you have intrusive thoughts and you're like, these aren't things I can say in a responsible forum. I don't want receipts of people saying I said this. but we want to just purge ourselves of these like unwanted thoughts. Can I preview a take purge I had, Kevin? Yeah. Like literally, like I had this thought the other day. I'm going to say it on. I don't believe this. I'm not attaching my professional credibility to this. However, when I watched the Patriots preseason game, I was like, Trevion Henderson is Marshall Faulk.
Danny.
I was like, I'm watching it. Yes. Like, this guy is unbelievable. This guy crazy. That's not true. I'm wrong. That's not the case. However, when I watch him, I'm like, this is Marshall Faulk. He's unbelievable. Like, he's crazy. He's going to be crazy good.
Drake May. Trevion Henderson. Stephon Diggs. We're winning the Super Bowl, Danny.
Yeah, you got
doing it.
Dude, well, careful, because the Giants have the best D-line they've had since, you know.
Oh yeah.
Asante Samuel was in town.
First impressions of Abdul Carter. Again, flashbacks. I don't want to hear about a great Giants defensive line pass rush.
Abdul Carter is Micah Parsons copy-paste.
Wow.
Which I think sometimes is simplistic, but, like, I don't – you know, you're always going to be careful of helmet scouting, but when a guy goes to a school in the same program and picks the same number because that guy wore it and, you know, in 11 as history at Penn State and then plays the same position because that guy did it, it's like at some point you're coached by the same people and you're doing the same thing and you're trying to – like, he's literally emulating him, and they're doing the same stuff with him. He got three snaps, got three pass pressures against the Bills. It's the starting left tackle for the Bills, Deion Dawkins, who's not like Trent Williams, the best left tackle in the NFL, but Deion Dawkins is easily a top six, he's probably a top five left tackle in the entire league. Abdul Carter beats him in the first rep, beats him in the second rep, third and long. They do what Dallas does. They move with Micah Parsons over the guard. They moved Abdul Carter over the guard as a defensive end, and just because they just want him physically closer to the quarterback to deal with a worse pass protector. And he just goes through the guard like knife through butter, like he's not there, and just gets to the quarterback, ends the play. I'm like, that's Micah Parsons. And so we'll obviously need to see him during the regular season, but he did it against left tackle, like a real player. This isn't like a terrible guy. So Abdul Carter looks like the absolute truth.
How about Jackson Dart?
I hope he doesn't suck. Honestly,
is he even going to play this year with Russell Wilson there and everything?
Basically, if you start Jackson Dart and then you need to bench him for Russell Wilson, it's like a catastrophe. But if you play Russell Wilson and bench him for Dart, that's good. So I think that he'll probably come in at some point. I would like Jackson Dart to actually have to – I don't mind if he has to sit for the whole year. I mean, Tom Brady sat. Aaron Rodgers sat for 3 years. Patrick Mahomes sat for a year. It's not a calamity to sit. Having said that, you're basically – the basic bet is that Brian Daboll can develop Dart like he developed Josh Allen, but Jackson Dart is not Josh Allen, so the ceiling isn't there. However, I don't want to be too pessimistic. I think with Dart, realistically, I like the toughness. He's tough. He has the deep ball. He can run, and I like those things. Realistically, I don't think we see him until the second half of the year because the Giants' schedule is kind of crazy, where the Giants have the hardest schedule in the NFL this year, and – you'd think the first month is going to go to Russ because they said when they signed Russ in March that he's the starter. They haven't wavered on that since. But there's a stretch where they played like the Eagles on Thursday Night Football week 6. Then they play the Broncos week 7, probably the best defense in the NFL. Then they play the Eagles again week 8. So it would be malpractice to put Jackson Dart in for that stretch. So I think week 9 at the earliest for Jackson Dart.
We'll be right back. How you feeling about your Knicks this season, Danny?
I want to ask you how I feel about the Knicks, because let me tell you something. It's really weird to watch your team eliminated and then just you're like, oh, look at the Pacers ascend. Look at the Celtics ascend. You're like, oh, you're thinking about what's wrong with the Knicks. And then you're like, well, Jason Tatum Achilles, Tyrese Halliburton Achilles. And you're like, this is the Knicks year, is it not? Am I wrong? I'm looking at title odds and it's literally just the Cavs and the Knicks. The Cavs are like... the Cavs and Knicks are both 8-1 to win the finals. And then it's the Magic are like 17-1. Like the Knicks by default are just, are they ever going to have a better shot than just having to beat a Cavs and a Magic team to go to the finals?
No, I think this is their best shot for sure. No doubt about it, Danny. I mean, look, you look at what they were last season. Then they changed from Tibbs to Mike Brown, which on paper, you would think that means the offensive system is going to have more layers to it. It was a very Jalen Brunson-centric, and rightfully so. Brunson's an awesome player, but it was a lot of pick and roll over and over, a lot of repetition. Mike Brown, with what he did with the Kings installing that motion offense, a lot of movement. I think maybe you'll see Towns more as kind of a hub sometimes. That could be a good thing for Bridges, a good thing for OG and Obi. Just more diversity with play calling in the half court, I think, would really aid that Knicks offense and also help Brunson out too, because he can play on ball and off ball too. So I think that's a big change for them, is getting Mike Brown.
So I was going to ask you about that because, look, I'm not a genius like with basketball or anything, but I do learn some stuff just from osmosis of working at the Ringer. And I will say that Thibodeau, he's the Kirk Cousins of the NBA to me, of just the floor is so high that when you first get him, you're so excited. By year three or four, you're like, you're kind of, the ceiling's low enough that you're like, okay, I'm getting tired of this. And I do think on one hand, the life cycle of it did time out. I'm a little bummed that they fired him, and then like now the window seems really open. But to your point, the offense, I'm not a basketball expert, but when I watch the Knicks offense, I'm like, it is just Jalen, do something. Like, there just really wasn't, I just feel like the Knicks that never at any point had a plan C on offense.
And that was the issue a lot of the times, is I feel like when Brunson went out late March, April, whenever the exact timeline was, you saw OG Anunoby and Mikal Bridges do more with the offense. And it was like, oh, wait a minute. Like, I hope they carry this on, you know, throughout the postseason when Brunson actually returns. And they didn't really. And I think that's where Mike Brown's going to help a lot. And I also like really like the additions, Gershon Yabusele and Jordan Clarkson. Clarkson adding a bit of a spark off the bench on a really cheap contract, an upgrade over campaign. And then Yabu, man, like he was out of the NBA for like 4 or 5 years playing overseas. He was drafted by the Celtics years ago. And then he goes to Philly last year, has a great season, shot the hell out of the ball. He's become a knockdown shooter. He can attack closeouts, rock solid defensively. To me, I think he adds like an element of front court versatility for the Knicks that they were missing last season. We saw in the playoffs how Tibbs finally started using two bigs with Karl-Anthony Towns and Mitchell Robinson on the floor together. But Yabu also can be kind of that big presence, versatile, switchy defender.
How tall is he?
6'7", 6'8". Like, he's not huge by any means, but he's just large, big body, big frame, right? And so I think you might maybe see a little bit of maybe small ball fives, you know, at times when it's no Towns and no Mitchell Robinson, or he can play the four. So I just think the Knicks have a lot more lineup versatility in addition to the fact that, to me, Mike Brown is an upgrade over Tom Thibodeau for what their needs were offensively.
Yeah. It's fine as long as he plays big, because I think just having Brunson, obviously, is a defensive liability, and Towns, who, I mean, honestly, I will say, I think Towns answered any questions I had about him and that trade and everything, because it's so funny, because it was really so much, the picks for Bridges was crazy. Not crazy, I get what the idea was. I just think that the Bridges trade and the Towns trade together, I just feel like one of them would have made sense. And again, I'm not an expert here, I get the idea, but I just feel like the Bridges trade was a bet on culture. It was almost, to me, a full circle revolution of the NBA, of going back to like the David Halberstam, you know, beginning pre-free agency of like, culture will beat a team of mercenaries. And then you get rid of the culture, you get rid of DiVincenzo, and you bring Towns in. And I'm like, okay, but Towns was so good offensively toward the end. I'm like, okay, this was worth it. He was just lights out. But doesn't necessarily play larger than he is. You know what I mean? And so I think, but Josh Hart is like the embodiment of that. I just like that. I like the Knicks being a gritty team, and I'm addicted to that. I love the idea of New York City not being glitzy glammy. Like, I like that Josh Hart's on the Knicks. But I don't know. Like, realistically, What do they have to do to beat Cleveland? Obviously, then if OG Anunoby has some hamstring injury or quad issue, like, they're screwed. I don't like that. I don't like how thin it is. But also, Tibbs wasn't playing the bench as much. I don't know. What do you make of the East this year?
Look, I think part of it is, what does Cleveland not do? Because with the Cavaliers, Kenny Atkinson, their head coach after the season, had this, you know, long thing in his postgame presser after they got eliminated. And he's like, you know, the Indiana Pacers, like, they play faster, they play with tempo and force. And, you know, he's essentially saying, we don't. And so I think this year for Cleveland, if they're not a team that's setting tempo, playing fast, playing with being able to sustain that, with having stamina from start to finish in games. To me, I think the Knicks are a team that does have some of those qualities with their toughness and their grit, you know, driven by Josh Hart, among others on that team. The Cavs, if they don't have that, I wouldn't take them in a series over the Knicks. Obviously, changes can be made. April, May, the playoffs are a long way from now. But to me, I think the Knicks I love their changes this offseason. I feel like they made more big changes to the complexion of the team that should be a positive thing for the Knicks. Whereas the Cavaliers, I need to see it. I want to see it from them. Because even though they were a 61 team last year, Danny, the Cavs' second half of the year weren't anywhere near as dominant as they were the first half of the year when they were just unstoppable. Yeah. Second half of the year, they were good, but not outstanding. And I think from the Knicks, you know, I haven't made my predictions here. We're only in the middle of August at this point. But I think in the East, I'd probably lean towards the Knicks representing the East over Cleveland. But you asked about the state of the East. I don't think you should overlook the Bucks with Giannis, depending on what they do with their system around him, what Doc Rivers installs. I don't think you should overlook Orlando.
Because the Knicks are going to trade for Giannis? Is that why?
In your dreams.
I have to. Here's my issue with the Knicks. Wait, I'm going to abuse you, you having me on your show. I sometimes get concerned when the idea is, well, if everyone can stay, like the amount of Giants teams I've watched where they're like, well, God, if all these guys who are always hurt can stay healthy. And there's an element of that with this team. OG, I love OG Anunoby. Shout out, Danny Chow, your former colleague, my current colleague, Danny Chow, who's just OG Anunoby, is like his favorite player in the NBA when that trade was made from the Raptors to the Knicks. But obviously he's had a lot of injury issues, but also just Mitchell Robinson, who I like. But obviously Mitchell Robinson is in and out of the lineup. And I'm like, you're telling me that the Knicks title run depends on Mitchell Robinson staying? Like, what if Mitchell Robinson gets hurt after the trade deadline? Like, this is over? And I just, do they have the assets? This is where I don't understand the NBA. Do the Knicks have the picks I don't understand how the second apron works. Can the Knicks add a center on this roster if Mitchell Robinson breaks his foot? Because the idea that Mitchell Robinson, I just don't think this team can play defense without him, but I don't like the idea that the title run, which is clearly the best year of my entire, like no exaggeration, the best year of my entire life, they'll ever have a chance to win a title. I don't like that that's the weak link. And I'm like, do they have the assets to make another move?
They could make a move. So this year they have the rights to their 26 first round draft pick. They also have a Wizards first round draft pick. So they could trade their own first outright this year or trade the Wizards pick, which is protected. A little bit more complicated because of the protections and all that. We don't need to get into the whole minutia of this necessarily, but
NBA trade culture is crazy.
but that's about it. Like they have their 26 that they can move, or they have swaps in 2030 and 2032.
But here's my question. What did Desmond Bane go for? How many first round picks?
Four, five, something like that.
So what is one first round pick for a team trying to win the title? That's a second round pick. You're trying to come in 28th or 30th. That's a second round pick. What is that worth? What could you get with a first round pick?
Well, and sometimes a team would rather have a second round pick over a late first round pick.
Because they pay them less? That's crazy, dude. That's unbelievable. So God. Okay.
It's all very complicated. They have some flexibility. They could trade Miles McBride if they wanted to. Like, they have some pieces that are interesting if they wanted to add another center. But I think, to your point, though, that is the thing I look at the Knicks. I'm like, man, you're really trusting Mitchell Robinson to stay healthy for the full year. Does it mean that Ariel Hakpourty, maybe he's the guy? Is he going to feel like he can step up in year two? Maybe. Maybe he does. Maybe he gets more playing time. So I think there's some paths for the Knicks, Danny. I do think there's some paths.
There better be a path, KOC. They're the favorite.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just so weird to say. Like, I've never said this in my life. This is the next year. I've never said that. I'm like, but it's the Celtics, like, just the Red Sea parted in like a 2 week span. It's crazy.
Literally, it was such an emotion. Two torn Achilles into the Pacers.
Two torn Achilles parted in the sea. And now it's just like, well, damn, the Knicks need to win the title this year. It's like, I went from just a few years ago, I was so happy that they were just making the playoffs and being competitive. And I just, anyway, while we're here, can I just ask you one last question about the state of the NBA and a couple things I don't understand? Cool. So when I joined The Ringer, and you were very kind to me when I joined as a mere intern, almost, I don't want to date either of us, but we're coming up on like a decade ago. And I remember all anyone would talk about in the NBA, and part of it's just because we had a Philly-Boston culture, but like all anyone would talk about was the process. Oh my God. The collection of assets, blah, 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 blah. Look at the Sixers. Well, the Sixers suck. You know who did it? The Thunder. And I just feel like maybe I'm just not tapped into the discourse enough, but I just feel like what Sam Presti just pulled off with the Thunder is quite literally the best front office era any team has ever had, period. Like, maybe there are things as good, but I feel like I don't know anything about hockey, but from what I've known about football, basketball, and baseball, there has never been, I'm sure soccer has examples, but I don't know if anything's been definitively better than what the Thunder just did, from drafting these three MVPs to losing Harden, Durant, Westbrook, trying to start from zero, and then just winning a title within basically 4 years of this Paul George trade. And then they still have the most draft picks in the NBA, right?
Yes, they still do.
Why does no one talk about Sam Presti like he's a god among men? Why is no one else doing this? Like, literally, teams are just giving away first round picks like candy. They're just giving it out on Halloween. And Sam Presti just showed you the way to do this. Like, what am I missing? Like, what do I not understand about why is everyone not just hoarding draft picks? I don't get it.
All right. I'll respond to the first thing you said, that this is like the greatest turnaround. I think it is in my lifetime too, because they go from a team that in the playoffs every year, they lose them in the first round, I think like 4 years in a row. They lose Russ. Obviously, KD had walked for the Warriors. Prior to that, they traded Harden during the middle of the whole first run with that first iteration of it with the three young guys, KD, Westbrook, and Harden. They missed the playoffs 3 years in a row. They win 22 games, 24 games, and then they take a big leap, 40 wins, then 57 wins, lose in the second round, and then 68 wins. One of the better regular season teams ever. They win the finals with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander at 26 years old, still young, still possibly not yet at his peak, and one of the youngest teams in NBA history since the Blazers in the late 70s won the NBA Finals. So they collectively as a team might not be at their peak. Why are teams not hoarding picks? Well, it's interesting with OKC, Danny, because one of the criticisms of Presti this season and last season was that he wasn't cashing in on those picks, that he wasn't trading those picks away to go get a Wendell Carter at center from Orlando, or to go get this veteran or that veteran to try to increase their odds. But he did it without trading picks. They win 68 games and win the NBA Finals. Why are teams not hoarding picks? I think it's in part a little bit of good fortune here, a little bit of timing. Like, you trade Paul George to a desperate Clippers team feeling like they had to trade for Paul George in order to get Kawhi Leonard to sign. So you shake them loose for a ton of future picks and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander on top of that, who was finishing off his rookie season with the Clippers, becomes an MVP. There is an element of good fortune here for the Thunder as well, with the amount they were to get back in that singular deal.
SGA becoming SGA is not replicable. But clearly getting four first-round picks is replicable, because Desmond Bane just went for five.
The thing is we saw the inverse of it, though. Harden with OKC becoming an MVP in Houston. Like, they did target him as a guy that they felt could become a star. Becoming an MVP, I don't think that's fair to say they expect that. I don't think they expected that.
It's like the Ravens and Lamar. You knew he was good, but they took a tight end before him. It's the same thing. It's like, I'm sure the Thunder didn't think SGA would be an MVP. Yeah.
No, Tom Brady was a sixth round pick, you know. Like,
exactly. They passed that on five times. Exactly. And so, but I guess my question overall is, why is everyone in every sport not trying to emulate this? Because I don't want to pretend I understand the second
hoarding picks. But, you mean?
Well, I guess because I understand that in the NBA, obviously, like, more a great player moves the needle more than in any other sport, other than maybe a football with a quarterback. But even then, it's like a great player in the NBA it just gets you there, and I get that you need to get one. What I don't understand is why anyone below a great player, like even the Knicks with Mikal Bridges, where I'm like, so let me get this straight. He just went to Villanova and they know him and he's part of this like CAA Villanova brotherhood that just the Knicks mafioso are like run. So they're going to pay four first round picks. I like Mikal Bridges. I get you need 3-and-D wings who can do all this stuff. But I'm like, I, like four first round picks. I like, and I guess in a world where if it's going to be the second, and again, I don't understand the second apron, and please correct me if I'm wrong. But the way I understand it is it's functionally a hard cap, more or less. And if I know anything about the hard cap from covering the NFL, is it becomes, the name of the game becomes rookie contracts and locking in below market values. And so why are teams just throwing away the only mechanism you have to acquire below market talent, which is draft picks? Like, why are they just giving it away? Like, I don't understand how the Knicks, like, I don't know. I guess my question is, is it really smart to give away four first round picks for one player?
It's timing, I think, in the arc of your builds, right? Like, I think for the Magic, giving up what they gave up for Desmond Bane, it's like, okay, we have this elite defense. We have these up-and-coming stars in Paolo Banchero and Franz Wagner. We badly need shooting. We're 30th in the NBA in three-point percentage. I think they were 22nd in attempts last season. Well, Desmond Bane is an immediate fix and solve to those issues to help
propel us up. He's like the best shooter that isn't Steph Curry, right?
Yeah, I mean, one of the best shooters. I want to say the best shooter not named Steph. But he's, you know, top 10, top 15 shooter in the NBA, yeah, in terms of volume and efficiency, and I think in terms of versatility as well. So the Magic get that guy. The Bridges, for Bridges going to the Knicks, it's a team that feels like they're pieces away. They need a lockdown wing. They need a guy to go against Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown in Boston. They need a guy for Western Conference matchups against Luka, whoever it might be at the time of the deal. They go and get Bridges, one of the better defenders in the NBA, a guy who is a good three-point shooter or was prior to his mechanics falling apart and having to fix it himself. Great mid-range guy. They feel like this is a guy that can put us over the top. Now, the risk in that, to your point, is you trade for Mikal Bridges for more than he's probably worth. Now Giannis is in a position where it's like, well, is he available? Is he not available? You've played yourself out of that. And so that's where I think with OKC, that's why they haven't cashed in on trading two picks for this guy, one pick for that guy. Because they know that there will come a time as they build this thing out where so-and-so, you know, is going to become too expensive. They have to trade a certain guy, and then they're going to be sitting on a pile of, you know, 10 future first-round draft picks where they can say, all right, we're going to cash in seven of these to go get that star, or four of these to go get that player. There will come a time they have to, but that's why teams are doing it. And I think for OKC, they compiled these picks and experienced their rise during a time where they were just hitting pick after pick. They hit on Jalen Williams as a late lottery pick. They hit on Chet Holmgren as a top five pick. They've had hit after hit after hit to build this out around SGA, whereas these other teams haven't had those hits in the draft around their star players, and that they therefore need to cash in picks in order to get that guy immediately after missing on those players.
With the giant caveat that I have no idea what I'm talking about and I don't understand the NBA, I think that the only thing I'd say about the Thunder hitting picks is luck is surface area. Luck is when opportunity meets preparation. Mm-hmm. But every pick is an opportunity. That's why the Patriots trade down every year and get assets. And I guess what I'm saying is fundamentally, if it's a market, it's going to ebb and flow between, like, at some point players are going to be undervalued and picks by getting players is going to be good. And then every now and then players are going to be overrated and picks are going to be underrated. And I just feel like right now the NBA is in this era of what the Rams were 5 years ago when the GM was like, F them picks and traded two firsts for Jalen Ramsey. The Rams went 8 years without a first round pick and won the Super Bowl. But I just feel like the entire NBA thinks they're the Rams. And they're like, well, the future, who cares? Guess what? If the Rams didn't win the Super Bowl, we would make fun of them relentlessly. And I just feel like in a world where Sam Presti's gobbling these picks up, I just feel like it's like watching all these companies the last 15 years when interest rates were low, just like, yeah, we don't hoop money. Who needs revenue? You know, we're gonna burn all this money and look at these offices. Look how cool it is. The second interest rates goes up, everyone's like, wow, I really like money. Revenue's great. Netflix loses one subscriber. They're like, we love money. And I just feel like these picks, when the second apron, when you actually have to live in this salary cap era for like 2 or 3 years, teams are like, wow, I love draft picks. And you're going to look at these deals that went on in this era of like, yeah, four picks here. I just think it's going to, my gut, having no idea what I'm talking about basketball, but having watched the NFL for a really long time, I just think this will be an era where you're like, yeah, four firsts for Desmond Bane, Mikal Bridges, sure. And in 3 years, I just don't think people are going to part with him, because you're going to have guys have done it, swing, miss, and be like, whoops-a-daisy. I don't know. That's just my two cents, because it's hard. But also, it's just hard for me to wrap my mind around it. But also, I understand that the 25th pick in the NBA draft maybe isn't as valuable as the NFL. So anyway.
Exactly.
Thank you for letting me hijack your show.
No, I mean, it's a good conversation, because team building, look, NBA executives meet with NFL executives, and they meet with MLB execs, and they meet with, you know, NHL guys. Like, there's always a lot of crossover talk among front offices trying to learn what these teams are doing and how it can help them. It happens. So I think, the 25th pick in the NBA draft historically is not going to lead to much of anything.
No. That's just cigarettes and draft picks in any sport. They're just cigarettes in prison. And it's like, you just don't give them away. They're hard to get.
Sure.
They always have value. Exactly. I don't know.
To me, I agree with you, Danny. If I'm a winning team, like this, the Golden State Warriors are a great example here. They wanted a two timelines approach: contend for championships while also developing young players on the roster. So they drafted James Wiseman with the second pick. They drafted Jonathan Kuminga. They drafted Moses Moody. They drafted a ton of young guys. None of them have worked out. But the idea of developing youth while competing is, I think, sound. It's right, especially in the nature of the NBA today, with the collective bargaining agreement, rising salaries, more penalties for teams that have an inflated payroll. So I think you're going to see more teams try to attempt to do that in the years to come. But it's also going to depend on circumstances. Like, you talked about how the East is wide open for the Knicks. Well, it's also wide open for the Magic, and it's wide open for this team.
Yeah.
So they're feeling right.
Or the Knicks win it. Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to sacrifice our future in order to take advantage of the now. And that's the Magic or the Knicks.
Yeah, if they win, if they just make the finals, it was worth it, because you just, all you want is a puncher's chance. So I see what you're saying. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Who cares?
I mean, it's tough, man. It's hard. There's no one perfect formula to go win a championship. But ultimately, I like the Magic going for it. I like the Knicks going for it. I think these teams should be going for it, especially in the Eastern Conference right now. The West, a lot more difficult. There's a lot more teams out there. It's going to be crazy to see how that all plays out. Danny, thanks for joining me today, man. Appreciate you, dude. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, so our Ringer Fantasy Football Show, Spotify, YouTube, Apple Pods, wherever you get your pods, you can watch us on YouTube, watch us on Spotify, or listen. So that's the Ringer Fantasy Football Show. And if you want our rankings, it's fantasyfootball.theringer.com. Obviously, Yahoo has great rankings, but also fantasyfootball.theringer.com. And thank you for letting me come on, give some advice, and then just like totally hijack your show and ask you about the salary cap.
That was the plan, Danny. Thank you for joining me, man. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, Kim. So you're crushing it.
Big thank you to Danny Hagfest for joining me today to talk NFL and fantasy. Thanks to you for giving us a listen. Thanks to Emmy for producing today's episode. Thanks to Father John Misty for the music, the beautiful music. We'll be back again next week with more NBA talk. Have a good weekend, everybody. See you.